Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome. Well, regular listeners know that I love talking to people who walk their own path. And all three of my guests are notorious for that today. They've all created their own unique lifestyles and are helping others at the same time. Coming up in about 20 minutes, I'll be talking with Daryl Hammond, founder and CEO of Kaboom.org, fantastic organization. In 1995, Daryl read a tragic story and some startling statistics around that story. And instead of shrugging his shoulders and saying, well, you know, the world around us has changed, he went immediately into action and changed the world around us. My third guest today is an award-winning writer whose stories have changed the world of those she's touched, from regular readers to those in schools, hospitals, and even prisons. Her name is Charlene Costanza, and her latest book is called The 13th Gift, and she'll be joining us around 12:40 today. But first, I'm very pleased to introduce a really dynamic woman who has helped, through her work, change the way that many women think about business and themselves. Jen Groover is an advocate for female entrepreneurs. She's been tagged by Success Magazine as a one-woman brand and a creativity and innovation guru, and as a leading serial entrepreneur by Entrepreneur Magazine. She's gone from hosting guest spots on QVC to becoming a regular business and lifestyle expert for Fox's Strategy Room, ABC's Money Matters, and CBS's The Early Show, and more. Her new book says it all in the title, What If and Why Not? Jen Groover, welcome.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
Well, I'm very pleased to have you, and I enjoyed reading your book. I want to start off by saying that you say in the book you used to withdraw yourself from situations or activities in case you failed. Very common thing that many people do. I think most people have experienced that at some point in their lives. But you say those two questions, the title of your book, What If and Why Not, changed your life.
Right.
Just give us a little insight into that and how that came about for you.
Well, actually, I had an aha moment before that. That really started to break down those walls of that fear, because I really was the type of person that when I did things, I wanted to do it 1,000%. And I came from a father who was, you know, military, and, you know, things were done right, and you did not fail. Failure is not an option. So I noticed as a child growing into adulthood, I would withdraw from situations in case I didn't think I was going to be the best at it. Instead of saying I'd be good at it and learning the process or learning about myself through the process, I would just not even try it. So I left out so many opportunities in my life, and I didn't try certain things. And one day I was reading, I had this idea journal that was immense and all these ideas in it, but I wasn't trying these ideas because of that fear of failure. And I was reading a magazine, it was either Fast Company or Inc., one of the entrepreneurial magazines,
mm-hmm.
and I read a story about someone who had the same exact idea as I had. It was in my idea journal, and it had turned to a $100 million company in just a few years, and I'm thinking to myself, I had the same exact idea. Oh my gosh, that's my idea, but what am I going to do at the end of my life? Show people my idea journal and say, look, it was my idea too, except for that person had the courage to do it. So I sat there thinking afterwards with this pit in my stomach, just feeling nauseous about why can't I have enough courage to do this? And I came up with this mantra that set me free, and it was, I have more fear of regret than I have of failure. Because of what I recognized at that moment, the clarity to me came that the feeling of regret and that pit in my stomach would be a lot worse than ever having tried something and maybe not succeeded at the way I thought it would be. But in every trial, you learn and you grow and you evolve as a human being, and you become smarter and better, and your wisdom leads to your next experience. So there's no way you could ever fail unless you allow it to paralyze you. So the one mantra is have more fear of regret than failure really set me free to say, you know what, I'm going to start trying everything. And then the what if and why not expounded on it, because I learned that we'll get these ideas and we'll go to move forward, and then we'll talk ourselves out of everything that can go wrong.
Right.
When I was launching the Butler Bag Company, I went out with this idea, like, yes, everyone wants this. I believe it's going to change the industry. And everyone in the industry started telling me every reason why it wouldn't. So all that self-doubt that I thought I got past and having more fear of regret than failure started setting in, because I'm thinking these people have more experience and they know so much more than I do. Well, they must be right. And I don't have any formal training in this, and I have no experience in this. And everything that could go wrong went through my head. And I was sitting in a meeting with somebody telling me why my idea wouldn't work, and I finally looked at them and I said, what if it does? Let's entertain that thought for 1 second. What if it changes the entire industry and you had a chance to be a part of it and you said no and your competitor says yes? Then how do you feel? And what I realized is it changed everything. It changed the entire power of that meeting. The power came back to me. And I got him to see in terms of possibilities. And unfortunately, in our society, we're conditioned to see everything that could go wrong versus everything that could go right. So I learned that that what if can open up the floodgate of possibilities of things going right,
mm-hmm.
not just exterior in the exterior with the world around us, but internally within ourselves.
Yes, yeah. And this book is very much about overcoming fear and fear of failure and self-doubt, as well as some great business advice in here. But I have to share with you, I just want to let listeners know that you are the creator of the Butler Bag, because we kind of glossed over that there. That's an idea that I had years ago. as have many women made their own little creations in their purses to stop their things spilling all over the place.
Yes, I know.
But of course, no, I didn't take it to market. You took it to market.
Right.
And there's another one in there that I was doing for years too, and that was cutting the feet off my pantyhose to wear under certain kinds of pants. And of course, that became Spanx, right?
Right, exactly.
And you mentioned that in your book too.
Well, there's multi-million-dollar ideas everywhere. It's just about having, you know, the courage, number one, to overcome your internal failure. I always say to people, if you can't get over your inner roadblocks, you can't get over your outer roadblocks. So the book is very much, it's equal psychological component of getting over your fears and learning how your thoughts create your outcome.
Mm-hmm.
And then also the technical side, because there's only books I noticed in my own journey. There were only books out there that were all technical of how-tos, or all the psychological, but no application to the psychology.
Yeah.
So this book is very much the psychological and the application of the psychological. It's like, how do you manifest your ideas, or how to change your thought process? And then how do you make that impact the people around you to become a leader? Because if you're starting a company, you're assuming a huge leader role, a leadership role. And leadership is the number one thing. People go to all these courses about shaking hands and looking, making eye contact and remembering a name. But leadership, essentially, more than anything else, is a energy of who you are when you walk in a room with confidence.
Yes. Yes.
So you can shake as many hands as you want firmly and look at as many people in the eyes. But if you're walking in without that energy of a leader and with the confidence of a leader, it doesn't matter. It's irrelevant. Those other things. So,
I know that you interviewed a lot of entrepreneurs for this book, Jen. What surprised you the most about their stories? I know that one day you want to go back and interview those who failed to see if there's a common denominator there, because many businesses, as we know, fail before they even get off the ground. But the entrepreneurs that you interviewed for this book, was there a common denominator there in their success and what drove them forward?
Well, there's two answers I'll give to that. First is all the ones that I interviewed also have failed. They were just the ones that got up that last time to mm-hmm. make sure it was a success. So it would be interesting to do interviews with the people who failed and never got back up. And I would guarantee you it's a psychological component that didn't allow them to get back up. But what I've learned is the common thread in all of this is the most successful entrepreneurs, I did most of, I can't speak for all of them, but the ones that I know work on themselves more than they work on their business. And what I mean by that is it's a constant recalibration of gaining clarity to your experiences. Instead of looking at failures as failures, seeing them as opportunities to apply new knowledge, or when something keeps not working for you, instead of thinking what the successful people do that maybe unsuccessful people don't do is they don't complain about it, and they don't let it deter them. They say, what am I still not doing right internally within my thought process that is holding me back right now?
Mm-hmm.
Or who am I not surrounding myself by? Or who in my organization do I need to let go because their energy is holding me back because they're so negative?
Critical factor. That is a critical factor. And I think many people, when they start out small, they tend to work with people they like and know, and then they get afraid to let them go.
And you know, personally speaking, I've spent the past year of my life doing it. And it's not easy because personally, you do take on this responsibility of, well, they helped me. They helped me grow. But if there is a difference between personal and professional. And if your company is now growing or losing growth because they can't take you to the next level, you have to let them go. Or if their energy is stagnant, where their energy was vibrant when they first started with you, that energy holds you back no matter how hard you're working. So now all of a sudden, your energy is vibrant, but theirs is so negative that you're on a hamster wheel. You're doing yourself a disservice.
Yeah. And one of the questions you ask in the book is full of these what ifs and why nots. And one of the questions is, why not start your business working only with people you trust? And one of the what ifs is about what if you're smarter than the competition? I wanted to take a quick look at some of the myths that you deflate in the book about entrepreneurs. You say entrepreneurs have big ideas. No, not necessarily.
Right. They don't necessarily have the biggest idea, but they're not necessarily the first to market with the idea. But the ones that succeed are the ones that surround themselves by the people who can bring that idea to life greater than they can. So a lot of times people don't want to surround by themselves by people that seem smarter or maybe quote-unquote competition because they're fear of losing control. But the reality is smart, successful entrepreneurs surround themselves by people smarter than they are,
yeah,
with more experience. They don't see it as a competition, which is a scarcity mindset. They see it as abundance.
Yeah. And myths number two and three in here. Entrepreneurs are inventors. Entrepreneurs have a business background. Well, some are and some aren't, and some do and some don't.
Right. Absolutely. Some of the most successful entrepreneurs in this world, and I'm just going to throw two out there, but I could go on and on, Michael Dell and Steve Jobs, didn't finish college. And I'm not promoting not finishing college, but my point of it is that if when you have an idea and you're passionate about it, that passion is your fuel. There is no architecture, there is no education to this day that can support an entrepreneurial endeavor. As a matter of fact, there's a lot of studies done whether getting master's degree in business actually holds you back from entrepreneurially innovating and growing because your educational knowledge can limit your create boundaries.
Mm-hmm.
Where it's a lot of entrepreneurs that know nothing about their industry, but they just have an idea.
There's a lot to be said for that naivete, though, don't you think? Sometimes.
Absolutely there is. I knew nothing about the handbag industry at all. And I came up with my own concept out of nowhere. And everyone in the industry is looking at me like, well, it doesn't work that way. And I'm thinking, well, why not? Why can't it? And it's great. I always say to people, if everyone else is going right and you really want to leave a footprint in the world, go left.
Yeah.
You can't leave a footprint doing what everybody else is doing. You know, Mark Burnett changed the face of television with Survivor.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah, and no one was looking for Survivor when it came around. As a matter of fact, he got turned down like six times. Three times by Les Moonves of CBS, which eventually brought it up. And what he did was so powerful, and this is what a lot of leaders, really successful leaders, do, is he came up with a strategy to get Les Moonves to see visualize with him the success. So he took a picture, the front cover of Time Magazine or Newsweek, I forget which it was, superimposed his face and Les's face, arm by arm, on the front cover and the caption saying, Survivor changes the face of television.
Love it.
So being a leader and overcoming these obstacles is really about getting other people to see your vision with you and empower you and join forces with you to take it to that level.
Yeah, one of the other myths you deflate in the book, and I want to get this in because I was actually talking with somebody the other day who really wants to start his own business, but he's very introverted. You say entrepreneurs are not necessarily extroverts because I think that's a common misconception.
True. Now, I do have a firm belief that entrepreneurs who create a concept in a company are the most passionate person to talk about it because they're the visionary. So I first encourage entrepreneurs who maybe are socially introverted to learn how to become extroverted. And it's just like a muscle at the gym, and it is something people can learn. And it's, you know, goes with my other mantra that's throughout the book is learn to be comfortable with being uncomfortable. And the more you become comfortable with being uncomfortable, the less uncomfortable it becomes and the easier it becomes. So I do first challenge entrepreneurs to socially challenge themselves. If they are incapable of doing it, try then to manifest the partner that complements and has the same core vision and value that or values that you have to partner in the business with you to be that voice. Because a brand, a core, especially a small business brand, needs a voice behind it because that's what creates the relationship and the affinity. So it's not just a logo is one of the most minute aspects of branding, and people think it's one of the biggest. It's actually the most minute. The voice of the brand is the largest aspect of the branding.
Yeah, and you define promise in here, brand in here, the same way I would define brand. It's the promise. It's what customers expect when they hear your name.
It's the value proposition of who you are and what they're going to get every single time they're around you or working with you. And I always use the example, too, if your company, you have to, when you become an entrepreneur, you have to assume that, knowing that knowledge, you have to walk your walk and talk your talk. So if you have an eco-friendly company, you cannot be driving a Hummer around anymore. All components of who you are as the founder of the company have to stay in alignment with what that brand mission is. But to take that one step further, you can't know your brand until you know yourself, which goes back to why I said earlier, most successful entrepreneurs work on themselves more than they do their business, meaning more than they do their books or more than they do their marketing strategy, because they need to know themselves to know their brand.
Yeah, and that's a great segue into this question, and I wanted to get this in before we close out today, because one of the most important questions you say is, if someone is considering starting their own business, don't ask, what kind of business do I want? Which is where I think most people genuinely start. It's like, what do I want to do? What kind of business do I want? You say, ask, who do I want to become? I wonder if you'd talk about that a little.
Yes. So I, speaking as a speaker in the entrepreneurial circuit, get the question all the time. I'm not sure what I want to do or what I want to be when I grow up. And I say to people, or they're like, I want to own my own company, but I can't figure out what I'm passionate about. And the reason you can't figure out what you're passionate about is because you're starting from the front and trying to get the end answer. But if you get the end answer, which is, who do you want to be? What is the footprint that you want to leave in this world? What is your core mission of who you are? What is your intention every day? So I use myself as an example. My intention every day is to inspire and empower more people that they are more capable of anything that they thought that they were capable of accomplishing. Then that sets an intention and a core value of who I am. So from that, I can do so many things. I can speak because that inspires people. I can write books because that inspires people. I can create products that are innovative because that inspires people. So my distribution channels of my message is different, but it's still core. I still have my core value of my intention every day and empower, inspire people to know that they are more capable of anything they thought they were capable of.
Okay.
And that, once you have that core message, you can work backwards from it to really find what you're passionate about. And then you can figure out what the revenue stream is to support that passion.
Great advice, great advice. And another piece of advice that I really love in there, I think it was your mother who would ask you every day, how did you grow today? And, that's something I do once a year when I go away to my retreat. And I thought when I was reading your book, once a year is not enough. I need to be asking myself that question every single day. How has that helped you?
Tremendously. It's constant self-reflection, and especially as a business owner, multitasking so many things. So easily you can lose sight of what your purpose is and your vision and your goal. So I start every morning by staying centered in what my intention is of who I am. And then my intention of what I want my day to be like. But I also let go. Once I set that intention and visualize what my outcome I want for that day, I also let it go. that sometimes is not always going to work out to what I think it should be because something better is going to happen. So I envision it, and then I let it go. And then at the end of the day, I reflect on what did I do? How could I do it better? Why do I think something happened that I didn't necessarily intend to happen or want to happen? To learn from it. My undesired outcome will always have a lesson of wisdom and then a moment of clarity if you reflect on it. But if you don't reflect on it, then it's just going to seem like you're having bad luck and things aren't working out. And that's never the truth.
Yes. And I think oftentimes we can tend to push blame somewhere where it doesn't really belong if we don't really do that self-reflection.
Exactly. And then you become self-deflated and you also lose confidence in yourself. But the confidence comes actually in your clarity of every day realizing how you grew and how every what seems obstacle turns into an opportunity. And sometimes you might not really get the clarity for months down the road and you look back and say, now I get why that didn't work out, mm-hmm. because then I wouldn't be doing this. So the universe, and my one really good friend, Gabrielle Bernstein, who's an author and speaker, we speak together all the time, she always says, the universe has your back. And so to know the universe has your back when things don't work out, it allows you to maintain faith still in your vision and your goals. And one of the things that I did naturally that I didn't realize I was doing, I think because of the way my mother raised me in that sense, that somebody pointed out to me, she said, Jen, you always reach your goals because I notice you never make your goals negotiable. They are your goals, and they're not negotiable, and you're going to achieve them. And it's not going to be like, well, when I get this or when I'm doing that or maybe this will do or maybe someday I'll have that. It's this is my goals, and I'm going to do it, and I'm going to do it in this time period. So they're not negotiable.
Huge factor. You kind of touched on this a little in the beginning, but I want to ask you what you want to say to women who do let others persuade them not to do something or to adjust their goal, and, you know, in fact, to make their goal negotiable. What do you say to those women?
Well, I think women, what I've observed from women that I've worked with is women still hold on to the fear of judgment of other people. And, you know, it even goes back to like grade school and high school. You're afraid to maybe be the smartest in the class because people might make fun of you, which is such a silly thing as we become adults to realize that we actually cared about that as children. But women still do it too. Women especially are afraid to promote themselves and they think that it's shallow or wrong. But the reality is unless you have $1 million marketing budget that I'm unaware of as a startup, you have to be proud of what your accomplishments are. Learn how to state it in a way that you're comfortable with, but you still have to own who you are. And you have to talk about it in a way that services other people. So know that your work is of service, so people want to know about it, whatever it is. And maybe it's not of service to everybody, but it is of service to a greater good. So you want to talk about that. And that allows you to be powerful in your conviction while you're talking about who you are and what you're doing. And not saying, well, I can't talk about my business because people are going to think I'm bragging. That's silliness. You're reverting back to high school in that mentality. You want to say, this is who I am and this is what I'm doing and this is how I'm being of service to people and owning what your purpose is.
Yeah. Now, one of the things that I was talking with a friend about the other day, Jen, was she is trying to get something off the ground and has aligned herself with a company that she's not too thrilled about. You talk very honestly in the book about a situation where you were launching having your first factory line produced and the company failed to deliver. So you are huge on doing due diligence about who we want to work with, aren't you?
I am. And to that point and lesson, to go back on what I just said and build on it, sometimes you're given, I had a really awful experience in the beginning. But from that experience and keeping it, maintaining a positive perspective of what am I supposed to be learning, I could have stopped right there and said, who did I think I was to try and do this? It wasn't meant to be. Why always me? Why does this always happen to me? Instead, I looked at it and said, what am I supposed to learn from this experience? And now I will not make the same mistake, and I will find greatness in my next partner. So intuitively at that moment, because I always also say follow your intuition. If somebody doesn't seem right, they're probably not right. But my intuition at that first moment was to work with that person. Whether it was a desperation, my ego was overriding my intuition because I just wanted someone to work with, mm-hmm. or, you know, I wasn't listening loud enough, or it was what it was supposed to be. I worked with that person, and because of working with that person and those things going so miserably wrong, I now can easily identify all my business partners across the board in all of my businesses because of those mistakes and those red flags that I learned from and those questions asked that you don't know to ask until you've made the mistake, unfortunately.
Right, right. Well, I really enjoyed your book. I appreciate you being with us today. I know you're really busy. Your book is called What If and Why Not? Final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Jen?
Do not have fear in creating your own footprint. And like I said earlier, always have more fear of regret than you have of failure.
Sounds good. And I'd like to leave them with another one of your mantras, which I loved, which is don't judge, be inspired. Jen Groover, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. Have a great day.
Thank you. You can find out more about Jen Groover at jengroover.com, JENGROOVER.com. And her book again is called What If and Why Not? How to Transform Your Fears into Action and Start the Business of Your Dreams. Well, please do stay with us when we come back. We'll be joined by Charlene Costanza. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Catch the things you might have missed, you said. Get back to yesterday.
Coming May 23rd on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Dr. Walter Afield, founder and president of the Neuropsychiatric Institute. Dr. Afield discusses how to turn things around before emotional incidents lead to tragic events. He'll share emotional triggers, high-risk behaviors, and how to recognize potential warning signs. Vicki will also discuss the secrets of power problem-solving with leading expert Roger Dawson. That's all coming Monday, May 23rd at noon Pacific Time. Friend Vicki on Facebook or follow her on Twitter at hashtag Vicki St. Clair.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair discusses issues that are important to you, like good health and well-being, finding a new job and building your business, overcoming life's big challenges and making sense out of chaos, and living with passion and joy. Join us Mondays at noon Pacific for Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. See conversationslive.net for show schedule and guest information.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Talk radio with a difference. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. Welcome back. Well, we have a little change in programming today. We were going to be talking with Daryl Hammond from Kaboom.org, but he had an emergency and couldn't be with us. Fortunately, we managed to bring Charlene Costanza, my third guest, in a little early today. She was very well prepared and waiting for us today, so that was great. So we're going to bring her on a little earlier. And I want to tell you a little bit about Charlene. She's a freelance writer who's published articles in McCall's, Ebony, New York Alive, and as an author, she's the recipient of the Scotty Award for Outstanding Literary Achievement. She's a recipient of the Best Book Award from Arizona Book Publishing Association, and the Best Gift Book and Best Spiritual Book. She also facilitates workshops and is an inspirational speaker and the author of The 12 Gifts of Birth, The 12 Gifts for Healing, and The 12 Gifts in Marriage. And now she has a new book out called The 13th Gift, and we're going to find out more about that today. Charlene, welcome.
Good afternoon. Good day, Vicki. I'm so happy to be here early with you.
Yes, I appreciate that. I appreciate you jumping in. I want to talk a little bit about you, first of all, and then we'll get into the book, Charlene. I know that much of your writing has come from your own life experiences and the struggles that you faced. Tell us a little bit about your background before you started writing these books and how the first one came about, if you would.
the 12 Gifts of Birth is the foundational story in this series now that I've been, like, just so interested in exploring the gifts that we all have within us. But that first book is the foundational story, and I wrote it in 1987 when my two daughters were 16 and 17 years old. And like many moms, I had this kind of wake-up experience one day when I realized that the years had passed so quickly. Where did the time go? I know more now, and have I been a good mom? And my answer was kind of yes, but, because I really, in looking back, I saw that I would do some things differently. So then I asked, well, what could I do now that my children are preparing to leave home, and I really want to give them a message that they really know how valuable they are and that they have the strength and the power, the wisdom, everything to tap into whatever life brings. I mean, I knew I didn't know what they were going to be, but like everyone, they were going to face some challenges. Mm-hmm. So I was wondering, what could I say or do or give them? And I had a dream. That first book came to me, actually, in the form of a dream, which was the 12 Gifts of Birth, a little fable. And when I woke up and the dream started to fade away, I just, like, you know, that happens, dreams quickly, we know them so well, and in just a few seconds they're fading. So I quickly got the wisps of them and wrote them down and made a little handmade book for them. And then I realized, you know, this is a message that I need to hear again and again, and I think all the children of the world do. And then I decided that I would get it published someday, and it did take, well, it took many years, and it happened after many rejections.
And there goes the testament to, you know, sticking with it and believing in something and not giving up.
Well, and I really like to tell that part of it because I know that your listeners, we all have dreams, and sometimes things happen, you know, just with grace and ease and easily and with, you know, quickly. But very often it is after, you know, it does require a lot of persistence. And at first we may be told you can't do that. We may be telling ourselves we're not worthy or we can't do that. But we really have to pay attention to those dreams because they're gifts in and of themselves.
Yeah. You know what I, go ahead. Sorry.
You know what I'd really like to do now? I'm feeling that it would be really helpful to share the heart of that first message of the 12 Gifts of Birth.
Yes, do please.
That it begins with an introductory kind of fable, and then the wise women of long ago, or fairy godmothers, reveal a secret that they've been wanting to tell all the children of the world for a long time. And this is the secret they want you to know. At the wondrous moment you were born, as you took your first breath, a great celebration was held in the heavens, and 12 magnificent gifts were granted to you. The first gift is strength. May you remember to call upon it whenever you need it. The second gift is beauty. May your deeds reflect its depth. The third gift is courage. May you speak and act with confidence and use courage to follow your own path. Compassion, may you be gentle with yourself and others. May you forgive those who hurt you and yourself when you make mistakes. Hope, through each passage and season, may you trust the goodness of life. Joy, may it keep your heart open and filled with light. Now, I don't know if we have time to complete them since we don't really have that much time.
Yeah, just run through those last couple. It's fine.
Okay, talent. May you discover your own special abilities and contribute them toward a better world. Imagination, may it nourish your visions and dreams. Reverence, may you appreciate the wonder that you are and the miracle of all creation. The tenth gift is wisdom, guiding your way. Wisdom will lead you through knowledge to understanding. May you hear its soft voice. The 11th gift is love. It will grow each time you give it away. And the 12th gift is faith. May you believe.
Beautiful. Beautiful. And I know that the 12 Gifts for Healing, that I believe that was your second book, right? The 12 Gifts for Healing?
After traveling around, living in a motorhome with my husband for an entire year and traveling around the U.S. and visiting schools, shelters, hospitals, prisons, and reading that first book, The 12 Gifts of Birth, at the very end of it, in the very last place we were in Alaska, I stroked the front of my throat and touched a lump and just felt a chill of knowing that it was not good. Anyway, I was diagnosed then with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma, stage 4, and told there was no cure for that form. And then I realized that you know, I had just told thousands of people that no matter who we are, the circumstances of our birth, what's going on in our life now, we truly have these powers, this wealth within us to face everything and to heal, enrich, and empower our life. And then I had to really, that led me deeper because I said it's time for me to really walk my talk and go deeper into the gifts.
And so you, this was, I believe, in 2000 when you were diagnosed with cancer and you were going through your chemotherapy and you've been in remission since. What do you think was the biggest lesson that you learned during that period? Because people go through, I mean, it is a life-changing event. However it turns out, it's a life-changing event.
Yes, it is. And I believe, I've heard this, we all have, and I really believe that always a healing is possible. A cure may not always be achieved, but healing on some level is always possible and is available to us. And I think very often a cure is also. And really the healing mechanism is within us. And while medicine, out, which I respect to believe, one of my daughters is a medical doctor and I went through chemotherapy, but I really understood that it was, for me, not first of all, I didn't want to fight cancer. I wanted to release it, release all the dis-ease from my body, you know, on the physical level and also just any stored up regrets, resentments, just everything that was no longer serving me in a healthy way. So that is, you know, with that intention, I said, how every day can I use my senses, you know, use my eyes, my ears, my sense of smell, just everything, bring into my being, my consciousness, beauty and hope and joy, really nurture myself with the spiritual gifts every day. And I think that these powers in us do rouse the healing power in us.
Yes, definitely. I think you have such a great philosophy, and it runs through all of your books. I haven't read all of them, but I've read The 13th Gift, which we'll just get to in just a moment. And I just want to touch on your third book, which was The 12 Gifts in Marriage, because you have been successfully married for 40 years. You'd been married for 35 years at that time. And I'm guessing the question everybody asks you is, what are the keys to a successful marriage?
You know, I'm not sure. I certainly don't have a quick, ready answer to that. I do know that we have to stay flexible, always be growing, be listening to each other, practice a lot of, certainly practice the gifts. It is a big part of it. You know, really love ourselves first, honor ourselves. You know what I do, whether it's in relationship or whatever, whenever I'm facing a challenge in any area of my life, I like to say, what gift can best serve me now? So if my husband and I are in a time of, you know, when there's more challenges or there's kind of, you know, there's that ebb of flow in intimacy and closeness, and when there's the ebb, you know, just ask, what gift can best serve me now?
Yeah.
And, you know, what the answer for me actually that often comes up most often in all situations when I'm in a time of transition, questioning, big challenge, is the gift of hope. And to not only hope for a good outcome, but especially that when we trust in what is unfolding and hold on to hope in that way and really look for the blessing and the opportunity that is in every situation.
Yeah, I think hope is incredibly important. I've seen it with people who are seriously ill, and when they give up hope, there basically is no hope anymore. I think it's incredibly important and something that we tend to gloss over because it's kind of, it is a little nebulous.
Well, and I do think it's important, though, to go to that deeper level of hope in which we say, you know, we strive for some, like our ideal scene or the good outcome that we want, and paradoxically hold at the same time that, well, surrender, you know, and trust in the goodness of life. Trust that something is being worked out that on some level we may not see. There's meaning, there's goodness, there's beauty. That gets me through everything.
And that's a good segue. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about The 13th Gift, which is a novella of hope for all times. And my guest in this segment is Charlene Costanza. She's the best-selling author of The 12 Gifts of Birth. and of her newest book, as I said, The 13th Gift, which we'll talk about when we come back from break. Please do stay with us. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Intuitive dream coach Joyce Chapman says there are no little dreams, that every desire is important, and that you deserve life to its fullest. As a dream activist, Joyce has helped thousands of people gain clarity about their lives and make positive changes. She can help you too. See more information at joycechapman.com, and if you have a question for Joyce regarding your dream, email joyce at joycechapman.com.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Listen to podcasts of past shows at conversationslive.net.
Click the shows page on 1150kknw.com for the scoop on Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is freelance writer Charlene Costanza. She's published articles and is an award-winning author. Her books include The 12 Gifts, and The 13th Gift is her new book. And it's a novella of hope for all time. So, Charlene, I want to ask you, I don't want to give away too much of the story because it's a very slim book here. It's kind of, I said to you when we first came on, it reminds me a little of, Jonathan Livingston Seagull. It's the same kind of size and the same kind of, there's a little message there in this book, which you can very quickly read and take away with you. Tell me a little bit in your own words about the book.
Well, it's a story within a story. The outer story is about a woman, a U.S. journalist, whose name is Claire, and she is on an assignment in Eastern Europe. While there, after completing her assignment, and she's really not, she's feeling pretty depleted emotionally and out of balance in her life in some ways, but she is walking along and she begins to kick stones because her car is broken down. She's frustrated, and eventually she picks up that stone, as so many of us do, or we did when we were children, and she encounters an old woman named Baba who asks her why she picked up the stone and goes on to tell this journalist about a local legend that explains why people worldwide pick up stones. And within that story, when Claire hears the fable, it has a profound effect on her, which transforms her marriage, her work, and the way she sees the world. She begins to shift from stories that are just what's wrong in the world with how, for example, children's lives are improving in impoverished countries, and she's really looking for how do we see more beauty and hope in the world. And overall, the book really is a message for the heart much more than for the head, and it's meant to be experienced, one gets the message almost just more in your whole body and in your consciousness than it being any kind of intellectual book or something that you think about. Although it does have many symbols.
Right, right. And what it did for me when I was reading it was say, yes, Vicki, you do work too much. Because that's one of the problems that Claire, the journalist in the story, has. She's lost. She's out of balance. She's lost perspective.
Well, Claire is a reflection of me too, Vicky. So it's something I always have to work on. Everything that Claire is working on, I know myself.
Well, they say the best way for us to learn is to teach. So
right. And we write about what we need to work on in ourselves.
Yes, yes. Now, I wanted to ask you, the story within the story includes stones. And, you know, you mentioned that we pick up stones as we're around. And I said I probably shouldn't say this because environmentalists will get upset with me. But, you know, I try to always leave places as I found them. But wherever I go, if I find a nice pebble, I do pick it up and I put it in my pocket. And I have quite a collection of them at home, and I use them in fountains and, you know, garden arrangements and stuff. And I have a couple on my desk that I just like to pick up and touch when I'm thinking. So what's the significance of the stones in the book?
You know, I have been fascinated with like what you just said, and I do that same thing, and I've heard from so many people who do that. And so I've wondered, you know, and this book offers an explanation, and in it, the fable describes a kingdom that is on the cusp of change, and some things are going forward, but there's struggle between moving forward and those who want things to the status quo to stay in power and the commoners not to gain, any more power. Mm-hmm. And it really is a reflection of many things that are going on in the world now and that are always going on in the world, like what happens, struggles with greed and power. But what the stones are really doing in the story, because there's a dream within that story, is stones are leading. Basically, the explanation is that when we pick up a stone, it's because every little simple stone is leading us to remember something like a common dream or common understanding that we all have within our consciousness, and we know it, but we forget it. And that really is about the oneness that we all are, that we're a part of, and the wonder that there is in the world. And stones do invite us to do that, and I think that's part of the reasons why people pick it up. There's this wanting to connect, you know, be more grounded and connect more with the whole and with where we are, stay connected to wherever you have traveled in the world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I remember once this was really ironic because I was going through a phase where I was questioning, am I doing the right thing? Do I want to move this direction? Do I want to move that direction? You know, which is, you know, the good versus the best kind of situation.
Yes.
And I was walking on the beach one morning and I found this shell and it had a cutout in the middle of it with an arrow. And it was actually pointing north because I picked it up and I thought, well, it looked as though somebody had physically cut the shell and made an arrow hole in it. And it was pointing north. And I thought, okay, I'm going to pick this up as a symbol to remind myself to stay true to myself, you know, my true north.
Wow, that is a really powerful example. In fact, I'd like to share that on my website with readers because, you know, sometimes it is so clear, and it's more than just picking up the stone and getting a sense of peace or direction, but the arrow pointing north is just like a beautiful demonstration of how sometimes, how clearly, oh, spirit, the higher power, you know, that how intuition speaks to us to guide us, mm-hmm. how guidance comes to us in such beautiful ways.
Yeah. Now, and when we do come to a fork in the road, you know, as Claire did in her book, really, what are some of the ways that you determine which way to go, Charlene?
Well, I like to tune in and really listen to what my heart is telling me and make sure it's not my ego. You know, is there fear involved in some now, or is it truly from a loving, heart-centered place? And I think also by remembering that we really come to forks in the road, not just at big times in our life when it's about going to a particular school, a job change, something in relationship, a marriage, a divorce, but really there are forks in the road every day that we come to, and there are opportunities. I like to say, well, which way, what would be the high road? What would be the road less traveled? Am I willing to go that way? And if I find myself that I've taken the low road, that's a time to just call upon compassion, say, how do I learn from this? You know, if we take the road and then it's realize, oh, we feel that little bit of ickiness or get some internal feedback that maybe the other way would have been better. Not beat ourselves up, judge ourselves, but just say, I now know more for next time.
Yes, definitely. When you're feeling, run down, when you're feeling, you went through a very serious illness, when you're feeling in that place of maybe burnout, which I think I've heard from many people saying they feel burned out just by trying to keep things together, repercussions of the last couple of years, basically. It's affected families in many, many different ways. What are some of the ways you use to recharge your batteries?
Well, and of course, that way, asking oneself that is the most important thing, because my ways may not work for, some others. But, hiking, being in nature, playing with my cats, walking barefoot in the sand, arranging flowers, making sure I'm getting enough sleep, maybe go to bed a little bit earlier, dance to oldie music. One thing I try to do, I'm not sure if we said or not, but what is the 13th gift? That is the gift of wonder, the way we see the world when we're children. And I think that is really important. And that's part of the message for, Claire, how she gets renewed, is to begin to remember a little bit more about how she saw the world with wonder as a child, and what were some of the things that helped her, to return there.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to ask people, so what, made you say wow when you were a child? What just lifted your heart and you had a sense of delight? Like maybe the smell of fresh-cut grass in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
For me, it was, seeing forsythia and lilacs, and then when lightning bugs came, fireflies appeared in the summer, and very often nature things. But what really are those things that give you an uplift? And really make sure you build some uplifts into your day every day.
Yes, and I think it is so often the little things. I reading from the book here, Claire is on the plane. She's talking to her husband, and she says, on the plane home, I saw that I placed too much value on work. I saw how I let it define me, and little by little lost my true values. I lost my way. And she holds the stone as a reminder of who she is. And I think, that's what I do with my little pebbles too. So I could very much relate to this story. You talked a little earlier, Charlene, about dreaming. You love to daydream. You love to night dream. Do you actually keep a journal of your dreams?
At times I have. Presently, I'm not, but I really pay attention to when I dream. And but I especially like early in the morning. Meditation prayer kind of time, I get a lot of ideas, so I write those things down. I do keep I write out gratitudes every night. I find that another way to stay really in balance and refreshed and renewed, and go to bed thinking and feeling very positive things. But what I especially like to do is to honor the little ideas that I get that are about how to experience these gifts in more of an experiential way. I think one thing that's a challenge, it certainly is a challenge for me many times talking about the gifts, because they sound, they're abstract. We all know what they are, and they've been talked about and written about for centuries by poets, prophets, and philosophers. And we all know, we want love in our lives. We want courage. We want joy, faith, hope, love. And sometimes they sound like ideals or, they can even seem trite.
Yeah.
And out, sort of beyond us, just like, oh, yeah, especially we get older and we may become a little bit jaded. But what I like to do is do concrete things that help me to have an experience of opening to the gift in some way. And for example, when I feel fear, I started doing this when I first faced cancer. Instead of trying to jump ahead and ignore the fear and try to just reach for hope or one of the other gifts and feel better, make myself feel better, it's really important to just accept what we're feeling in the moment. Not try to change that, but honor that. But anyway, I go to my freezer, I get an ice cube and hold it in my hand and have that ice cube symbolize the fear that I'm feeling. And then put that into a little glass custard cup, and with the intention, I set the intention for my fear to simply on its own soften and melt away just as surely as that ice is going to melt away into water. And in a short time, it has done that. And then I bless the water and ask that it be transformed, and I go out and water, give some nourishment of water to a little plant outside. But I wanted to share that and mention that there are a lot of tips and tools and little activities like that on my website.
Yes, I love that story. I love that story, Charlotte.
I have that one on there, and I blow bubbles. And another one that's not on there yet is when I feel kind of low in faith, I go to my Lazy Susan, where all my herbs and spices are, and I get a mustard seed. I literally hold just one little mustard seed in my hand, and it's so small, but I say I do have at least that much faith. And with however much we have, you know, we can grow it.
Okay.
And
Charlene, I'm going to have to interrupt you. I'm so sorry. I want listeners to go to Charlene's website. We're at the end of the segment here. But I want them to go to her website, because if you're an educator, a parent, or a counselor, there is some fantastic stuff up there, some fantastic resources for you to use. Her book, again, is called The 13th Gift. You can find out more about Charlene and her work at 12gifts.com. Spell out the letter, the number 12gifts.com, 12gifts.com. Thank you all so much for being with us. Sorry, we have to rush off there. We just ran out of time. You can find out more about us at conversationslive.net. Live well, live strong.